Well, it is the week that was. Joining me in the studio this morning, we have got Kate Warden. Good morning, Kate.
Morning, Katie.
Lovely to have you in the studio with us.
It's
the
great
member
to
for
be
Sanderson
back.
And government whip. Is that right?
Yes.
Yes.
It is.
Got to make sure I get those titles right. We've got Terry Mills, the leader of Territory Alliance and member for Blaine.
Yes, good morning.
I got that right.
You did, yes.
My brain is not working.
It's Terry Blaine, well. Member for Mills. Oh,
you're doing
on.
Well.
We've got Tracy Hayes, who is the candidate for Fanny Bay. How are you, Tracy?
Morning, Katie. Well, thanks.
Welcome to the week that was. I don't know. What would we call it, Matt Cunningham? It's a crazy place in here.
An hour of your life you'll never get back, Tracy. That's what I thought.
And you'll be glad you don't. It's always good. Always good fun. Now, there is plenty to cover off on this morning, and we do know that from midday today, Territorians are going to be able to get out to the cinema, get their eyebrows waxed. I know I need that. and go to the pub without needing to order food, and competitive sport returns as well with crowds. I know my kids have got soccer again. Matt, I'm sure you've probably got to get to sport with the kids early on the weekend as well. Certainly good news. It is a good thing that we are in a situation where we've got these further restrictions. Stage 3 of the Northern Territory government's restrictions being lifted today.
Yeah, it's super, Katie. It's I think the NT News has got it absolutely bang on right today. We're the envy of the nation. I think that, you know, you talk about taking your kids. Well, tonight my big kid goes back to netball and I get to be a grandmother and babysit this evening. So it's all going back to normal.
Yep.
And, you know, things are good. We're hearing, I'm out regularly listening to people. They're really grateful the fact that they can now, I think today they can stand up, have a beer, won't have to have it with a bowl of
I
chips
heard it
anymore.
Described as vertical drinking, which made me wonder what horizontal drinking was. I think that's what we did when we were at university.
Nice.
Don't know if that's allowed, Matt. You might get yourself in trouble.
People are excited, but I think the message still has to be out there, Katie, that, you know, we have all these freedoms, but we got those freedoms because Territorians have been doing a really great job of social distancing and staying on top. So, who was that?
Oh, I don't know. Someone's phone's ringing.
Not me.
Not me, because I don't have anyone on the fifth floor.
And look, I guess, you know, while this is obviously a good thing, we know the restrictions are lifting. I tell you what, the discussion has well and truly still been dominated throughout the week by people calling for those borders to open. We know that even Scott Morrison, I believe, has now weighed into that debate. He's called on the Northern Territory and other jurisdictions to get the borders open in July. He said he wanted interstate travel to be up and running again across states and territories by July, a time frame that could coincide with the territory's school holiday period. We know that we're obviously going to have a change to the way in which you need to isolate and that type of thing from July. But like I said, those calls are getting really very loud from industry.
And they must because, you know, I'm sure Michael Gunner and his illustrious crew up there can read the play. That it's much easier to have restrictions, it's easier to manage. But when the restrictions start coming off, people start exploring that freedom. They'll be gathering and beginning to talk more about the future and the economy of the Territory as they are contemplating what lies ahead. And the Territory economy is doing very, very poorly before we came into COVID. And if we now are only spending our own money within our own small and, let's say, not strong economy, it doesn't augur well. So the call for protocols to allow other visitors to the Territory is absolutely essential.
Terry, can I ask Terry, though? Terry, it's all right to sit on the outside and spruik some rhetoric around it, but if you're in that position, when would you be opening the borders? Could you name your date today?
Well, I'll chime in here, Kate. I think it's borderline reckless not to have a plan going forward. What is stage 4 of the restrictions in the Northern Territory look like? The Chief Minister was out on social media saying, we've entered into the completion of stage 3. Where is stage 4?
It's Why really easy, Tracy.
Upfront? Why not be upfront with Territorians?
And I think...
No, the Chief Minister's talked about, we will do it when it's safe to do so. Now, I want to know what safe to do so looks like. You tell me what safe...
So that's very easy, Tracy.
What are the parameters you're measuring safety on,
Kate? I think we can all agree that no coronavirus cases across Australia is not. That's called a hard trigger, and we're not waiting for that. What we're waiting to see is make sure that when there are outbreaks, and we saw another one in Victoria just this morning, how that jurisdiction responds. That's what's really important here.
That is
if you
not
open
a plan.
Up the border,
that's,
no,
where's
that
your
is
plan?
Smart. It's
what
based on the health.
You're well, hiding behind.
Okay,
the
what's your plan, Tracy? And what's the date that the CLP is going to name today for the borders to be open? Because people on the doors are saying, please keep the territory safe. We are safe, and that's why we get the freedoms we've got today. So if you've got such a plan, outline it today and give us a hard date.
So is it
because
being
it's
driven,
disingenuous.
Is it being driven by the health issues, or is it being driven by the people on the doors? Because that's what every Labor person says to me. Oh, well, the people on the doors want the borders shut.
What it's driven by is the health decision
so
making.
What does it matter what the people on the doors say?
It's then? A health decision because people want us to be cautious. They don't want us just to run out there and say, look, it's going to be the 15th of July.
Well, that's fine. Well, then we should be upfront about that. We should say, well, this is political. People want the borders closed, so therefore we're going to keep them closed.
And what they're putting forward today is a political argument. What we are talking about but is...
A political, it's actually an economic argument.
A political argument is to say that the people... If you're saying, oh, the people on the doors are telling us they want the borders closed, that means that you are judging this on the politics of it.
They
you're judging
saying,
it on whether it will be favourable to you on August 22
that's not
to keep
I'm
them
saying.
Closed or keep them
what
open.
What people on the doors are saying, please
keep nothing
us
wrong
safe.
With that. There's nothing wrong with that.
They're saying
but be
keep
open
us
about
safe.
It. Say, look, people want the borders closed. Yep. That's why we're keeping them closed.
They want them closed to keep people safe. And whilst we have all of those things in place. So let's see what Victoria does today with their new outbreak. We've seen outbreaks that have given us quite a lot of confidence in, like, the abattoirs. They're important things and factors to go with and work with health professionals to go get it right.
Once again, we're not coming up with a plan of our own. We're looking at what Victoria's doing. Well, I'll tell you a date, Kate.
Come on.
A policeman came to visit me during the week and he said to me that he was advised that the borders were looking at opening on the 7th of August. Now, that's a few days out from pre-poll. If that's true, that is absolutely outrageous.
I want to know the plan today, and I certainly have never heard the 7th of August as a date because we've never named a date, and
no,
you're saying
that's
a date.
Well, where's your date, Terry?
Have you named a plan?
Give us your date and your plan.
You know, I made the point last week. I guess for me, there's nothing, I've got no political, you know, view, like I've got no political reason behind why I think the borders should open. I'm very keen to make sure that we keep every territory as safe as we can for as long as we can. But what I can see all around Australia at the moment is that we have certainly gotten into a situation where we've flattened that curve. And that was always the aim and that was always the intention. I understand that we're obviously wanting to look at how other states manage the health implications if there are outbreaks. But this is why everybody's downloading the COVID app. This is why we've still got that social distancing where we have to keep 1.5 metres away from each other. This is why we are adhering to all of these rules and regulations. I think if we push this out for too long, the goodwill that people have shown towards the government is going to disappear. You know, every business that you walk into, I tell you, the number one issue that people are talking about right now is when the borders are going to open. It is raised time and time again, and the majority of people totally understand the health concern behind it. We're not, nobody's stupid. Everybody understands the whole reason that we're in the situation that we're in. But a lot of people right now are hurting and they're worried that that's going to be exasperated by the borders remaining closed for a long period of time, and add to that the mental anguish that people are feeling at the moment.
Katie, you just asked me. This is Katie Wolf. Sorry.
Katie, and Katie. I'm Kate.
Kate.
She's
you're
Katie.
Kate.
Only my dad called me Katie.
Call me Wolfie
you're asking
if you like.
For a date. I don't have some kind of team up there sort of working this sort of stuff out of here and managing the politics of it. But my gut feel is that we should be considering the protocols around, say, the 15th for those independent travellers, for the, the grey nomads.
The 15th of June or
so
July?
So that's his gut feeling, just to reiterate that.
Sorry.
A gut feel.
June.
The 15th of June.
Yeah, June, sorry. 15th of June to set protocols for West Australia and South Australia to send a message to them that they can begin to start a plan to come and visit the territory and have the protocols in place, say, in Alice Springs, make sure that everything's okay, then they can begin to explore the territory. And I think let's test that as an idea. And if something happens between now and then, we could alter that. But we can manage it. But you've got to give compete. You can't just wait for everybody else. You have to lead and provide an opportunity for people to plan to come to the territory.
We've got a few messages coming through. I've got one here. A government with no plan is one who asks the opposition what their plan is. There's a lot of others here. Gunner won't till his buddy in Victoria says it's okay. Needs to think of Territorians. Everybody up here have taken the bull by the horns and no outbreaks. Trust the people who voted you Labor. Clowns in. So that's one message. Another one here. Hi, Katie. Is it NT ALP responsibilities to have a plan? There's no medical evidence to keep the borders closed. So it's now political. The Northern Territory is not Victoria.
And that's fair. That's just a couple of people's opinions that have taken the time to text you, Katie, and that's absolutely fine. But what we are hearing is that people are excited about what happens. I'm really interested to see what will happen today. We've got to remember the pokies open today. All of those sporting things go back today. And all it takes is one person coming across the border and we could have a big outbreak and we could see deaths.
You can manage
we
it,
have
surely.
To. Yes, well, God, you know, you've just told us your plan is having a gut feeling, Terry.
Yeah.
And
well,
that's fine.
Well, I'll back my gut and I'll make a decision and provide some leadership rather than just be reactive and muck around with politics.
People will be able to come over the borders and they'll be able to stay in their accommodation of their choice. They won't be feeling, we'll know exactly where they are. I think the real key thing there, Katie, is the app. We need more people to get on that app so that if we do get an outbreak, we can track and trace. They're the thing, the fundamentals. Pushing for an absolute hard date at the moment,
though,
I think, is just wrong.
Well, I think, though, what people are under... Yeah, that's the thing, I guess, that the government doesn't seem to be listening to at the moment is business. Nobody's sort of saying, just go open them up, it's a free-for-all.
Absolutely.
Everybody's saying we need a plan. And we've been really clear on that in terms of what Territorians have been asking for and what those industry groups have been asking for from very early on in the piece. They've said exactly that, you know, from Alex Bruce from Hospitality to... Greg Ireland from the Chamber of Commerce, you know, all of them have said we understand that health needs to be the main priority here, but we need something to work towards.
And I think you'll find that that's what we will provide, Katie. We'll see what happens today. It's stage three today, restrictions being lifted, and let's see where we go from today. We've already announced the 15th of June as a date that people can isolate at home without having going to a hotel. You can see those things lifting slowly, and we will work to make sure that we give people a hard date that they can know that we're working towards. And of course, as Terry said, if things change before then we will respond accordingly.
So I think the really important point here, Katie, is if government are playing politics with the border issue, there are going to be more Territorians losing their jobs and there will be more Territorians that will never get a job. That's the important factor here. It's not about gut feel. It's about government coming out, not waiting to see what happens today and tomorrow and making judgments about pokies and people's behaviour. This is fair dinkum. This is serious business. There's an element of reckless decision making here. If government is not revealing what the parameters are around what safe looks like for the Northern Territory, all we're asking is, what's the Chief Health Officer basing his decisions on? What's the Chief Minister basing his decisions on? Come out and articulate the parameters so Territorians understand where we're going and we can safely say, yep, it's not a political issue.
Well,
it's the safety and the livelihoods of Territorians on the table here. And what is the factors behind that?
And Matt, I'm not sure about you, but I know Channel 9 has been asking to be able to speak to the Chief Health Officer, Hugh Heggie, for a couple of days, as I understand it. Quite a few of the media are wondering when we're going to get an update from the Chief Health Officer of the Northern Territory. And I think that that would be a really important part of this discussion as well, hearing what he's got to say and hearing what those other health officers have got to say.
Oh, I think you're 100% right, Katie. I mean, I haven't put a request in myself, but it would be good to hear directly from Hugh Heggie. I do genuinely think, though, that it's more about the politics. I know that the Chief Minister said that he'll start reviewing it from the 15th of June and give 30 days' notice. So if I were a betting man, I would put my money on June 15 plus 30 days. And the reason is not because of the health issues. That's provided we don't get any more cases. But the reason is not because of the health issues. The reason is because of what you're reading out there on the text message. I think the public opinion was 100% behind the government and the Chief Minister when he shut the borders. I think it's been strongly behind that decision for a while. But I think that's slowly starting to shift. And I think that's what the government will make its decision on when they see that public opinion shift, you know, in the other direction. I think then they will change and open the borders. And, you know, there's no doubt that that's making a political decision. But at the same time, I don't think we should necessarily criticise political decisions being made, because that's what politicians do.
Just be upfront about it, though.
Yeah, yeah. But,
you know, I always think, so long as you're upfront and people know what you're basing your decisions on.
But if it was purely a health decision, they'd be able to say, all right, when we get to this point, you know, we can open the borders. But
yeah, but the whole discussion is restricted to not include the state of the territory economy, what lies next, what are the books, what are the real challenges facing the families of the Northern Territory for the next decade?
It is Friday morning, it is the week that was, and this morning I've got Kate Warden, Terry Mills, Tracy Hayes and Matt Cunningham in the studio with us. Now, I do want to talk briefly about the Arafura and the Masters Games being cancelled. Jerry Wood, the independent member for Nelson, he reckons he's disappointed by the government's decision to cancel the Masters Games. Now, I've got to say, we haven't had a huge amount of people sort of calling about the Arafura Games, and I think most people understand that we're not in a situation where we can have visitors from overseas. But the Masters, a lot of people are pretty worried about the Masters Games being cancelled. I know that it's a huge thing for the Alice Springs community.
It's a planning thing, Katie. So with these events, you actually have to outlay a lot of money up front and early, and the Masters Games were scheduled for October this year. And as you would know also, that the Masters Games attracts people of a later age group or an older age group, which are the
more
most
vulnerable.
Mere experience. Yes, I should say that. Yes, for most people in the room other than Matt.
Hey, I qualify.
So I think that realistically they are more of a vulnerable group. Stop laughing, Kate.
I played Masters basketball. This is my last
game. Yeah, but isn't that over 30?
It was a game of Masters basketball. I did my hammy and my knee in the one game.
But the amount of planning that goes into these events is huge. The amount of money that needs to get expended to make them happen is
Jerry
huge.
Jerry reckons we should still have a Masters Games with just our Northern Territory participants. So I believe it's 42% of participants normally come from interstate, and we've got 58% of them are Territorians. Could it be that we still have them in that form?
The problem with that, Katie, is you actually just deplete the competition. So it's that percentage.
So I might win.
So you might win. You might win. But if there's only six teams in say there's six basketball teams and three of them are local, then you've just got a three-team basketball competition. It's
sounds
very
like
tricky.
My kind of comp.
It's the economics in Alice Springs, and you've got to outlay all that money to make that competition work, whether there's six teams or there's three teams.
You disrupt
it's just
the local
too true.
Competitions in the process.
You
I
do.
Mean, a lot of these people are probably already playing.
Yeah,
in local
it's a vulnerable group. It costs a lot of money to set up right now, and it's better to be safe than sorry.
All right. Well, let's continue on with our topics for this morning.
Hang on.
Let's talk about his knee. He wants to talk about his injured knee a bit more. Come on, Matt.
I apologise. Your turn, Matt.
Oh, no. Read the paper tomorrow. There you go. I'm coming off the line.
Oh, about the Arafura. All right.
Editorial.
We know you haven't been a big fan from the start, really, have you?
Well, $7.2 million, Katie, is a lot of money for an event that returns $7.1 million of questionable economic benefit. That's, I think, the crux of it. And if you
so you're giving away your article for tomorrow already, Matt?
Yeah,
he usually does.
Well, that's one line of it, Kate, but there's plenty more. It's just a warm-up.
I look forward to it.
But I think that you know, beyond coronavirus, we're going to have to be smarter about how governments spend money.
Absolutely.
And I tell you what, if a government has $7.2 million to spend, I think there are ways that they can spend it that get far more economic benefit, far more social benefit, than the Arafura Games. My son went down to a soccer tournament in Shepparton last year. There were 300 kids there, 7,500 parents. I read that it injected $2.5 million into the local economy for a one-weekend event.
Junior sport is big business.
And I swear the cost of putting that event on couldn't have been more than a couple of $100,000. $7.2 million for the Arafura Games in this economic environment is insane.
Yeah, no, Langland didn't. He set the parameters of what you should be considering before making such decisions, and it didn't seem to
comply
with that.
Well, let's talk about the economy, because we know that the latest GDP figures from the Bureau of Statistics have shown that Australia's economy shrank 0.3% in the March quarter amid bushfires and the early stages of coronavirus. The Australia's GDP or economic output fell by 0.3%, like I said, with a big fall in GDP certain in the current June quarter. That will mark Australia's first technical recession in 29 years. A rise in the net exports and grocery spending could not offset the large falls in spending on travel and other services. And I think the tough part for us here in the Territory is, for us, we've been going through some pretty tough times now for quite a while before coronavirus struck.
Yeah, I think, Katie, though we have now seen the March figures, and the March figures did show that the Territory had, we had started to head right in the right direction. Of course, then Corona comes along and we're now looking at where that goes. So we had instituted a whole range of those measures. I mean, Terry just raised the Langerland report, and we've taken that on board, and we were moving forward in the right direction. That report demonstrates that. But up until March, that was definitely pre-corona. I'm sure, you know, that a lot will be said about the budget between now and the election. Of course, it happens every election, and that's fine. But I think that if you look at that report, and the Chief Minister's already said he'll bring the August report through to the 29th of July, we'll have a further report, an early report that will show us the state of the impact of corona.
It's funny, you know, I note then, Kate, that you said obviously budgets are something that people look at every time before there's an election. I've got to say, for me, you know, I obviously am concerned about the budget and the fact that a budget isn't being handed down ahead of the election. I understand the reasons why, and we've all been calling for those additional sort of information to be released. But, you know, I don't think I've ever seen people so interested in a budget or the way in which things are tracking as what I have in the Northern Territory over the last couple of years. And I think the reason for that is wholly and solely because we had the Treasurer come out sort of before Christmas a couple of years ago and release figures that absolutely frightened the hell out of everybody.
But I think we could have kept quiet
for a minute.
Well,
really,
yeah, you could, but
we didn't.
No.
We chose not to. We chose to be transparent at the time.
And the Chief Minister chose to go on holidays. And the Chief Minister chose to go on holidays. They dropped the dead cat of a report on the table, the Langerland report, and then went on holidays. And I'm interested to hear from Kate exactly what those measures are that the government have introduced. Now, we've heard the Treasurer talk about green shoots. I can tell you there's been more Roundup poured on the Territory than there has fertiliser in relation to the green shoots. We've had 10 quarters in succession of a decline in state final demand. Now, if that's not a recession in the Northern Territory by anyone's standards, I don't know what is. The Commonwealth have come out and called it early. No one has had the courage in the Northern Territory government to call it for what it is here. When this government came into power, we started off on the right foot. There was a round of economic summits. We had hundreds of people participating to that right across industry and business, coming to the table with ideas and plans for the future of the Territory. Then we had the development of an economic framework. Then we had a root and branch review. Then we had a Langerland report. Well, I think it's pretty safe to say that the whole lot have been ignored up until this point.
Well, $870 million deficit when we came to government is not, the amazing...
And what's it going to be, $7 billion by the time you leave?
Hang on a minute, Tracy, I just let you have your rant, but you know what? The fact is that we had that, and that was masked by the fact that the TIO was sold. That was masked by the fact that the buses have gone. There's no control over buses. It's now privatised. Also got rid of the port. That masked those figures nicely. So don't talk about economic, you know, being great economic managers and having these great things in place. The March economic report, the March report has come out now. You guys have been through it. There's not much mention out in the media about it because Territorians could see from that report that the bottom line was improving, and then we had slightly better improvements than we were anticipating, and now we've got corona.
Kate,
and you want us to come out and say all these
Territorians
things.
Lost their jobs in the 12 months before corona. 3,000 Territorians, according to the statistics off the government website that I looked at last night. The population's declined 1,600 with Boundless Possible before coronavirus. $3.2 billion down for private sector investment, over 58%. Private sector investment has been leaving the Territory in droves in the 12 months before coronavirus.
So that state final demand, it was, let me just take a look, it was down 1.2%, I believe it was, before Corona. But look, in addition to this, and like I said, you know, people are concerned about the economy at the moment, and there's no doubt about that. But in addition to this, we are seeing reported today in the paper that a staggering nationwide plunge in retail spending is going to result in a big hit to the Northern Territory's still unknown GST revenue pool, despite the territory recording the smallest decrease in the country. Terry, I know you've always said that, you know, we really need to be doing more in the territory to sort of stand on our own two feet, for want of a better word.
Yeah, we certainly, you know, we are thinking backwards. I mean, the Labor Party has basically built an argument around that they are not the CLP, so we don't know who they are.
We certainly aren't.
And we're talking about... you are masking the fact that there are going to have to be very tough decisions, and people are going to be required to trust you, and all in the absence of any kind of inspiration, of any direction or any possibility for the growth of the Northern Territory. It's all backward looking. And I reckon there's one figure that's just come out, Katie, that really have a look at this figure, and it indicates what's really happening with families. With our superannuation, you know, there was people were able to go and access their super. Now, to make a decision to go and reach into your super, your security for the future, is a big decision, and it means that you are having an immediate problem now eating into your reserves. 27,000 Territorians have reached into their super and taken out $215 million.
Wow.
Now, that is an indicator of the instability at the local level. Now, I don't know what people are saying at the doorstep, but they are frightened about the future. That means they're having trouble keeping up with their mortgages. They're just hanging on. And so that's why we have to be confident enough and begin to lead and create a pathway that people can have a bit of hope that something good could happen. Could you trust, perhaps, that we could have a system in place, that people could come and visit us, even if they are, independent travellers? Give them a plan, get some more money starting to flow. Just start this. Show a bit of confidence.
So, Katie, that says to me the superannuation figure, I agree with Terry, it's quite upsetting to see that. And that just indicates the magnitude of the financial problems going on within households and their budgets. When people have got to reach into their future savings, they're going to be paying for this for years to come. It indicates the level of economic malaise that's out there in the economy. We have absolutely no fat in the system. We don't have a war chest. We went into this pandemic with no runs left on the board.
We came into government with no runs left on the board, Tracy, I'm sorry. That's, you know, it's disingenuous to say, well, is your plan to cut jobs? Is your plan to sell things off, which the CLP has done historically? That's not a plan. That's a fire sale. So, you know, these economic plans, Tracy, I'm not taking away from
your... So what's your plan for paying down debt, Kate?
So we have started to... I'm not the treasurer.
$10 billion? No, but...
Tracy, I'm not the treasurer, but if you look at those March figures showed that we were starting to turn the economy. So that's just wrong. You can't add in the COVID stuff. You know, Terry, you're very quickly to say, let's just open the doors and let everybody in.
No, I didn't say that.
Yes, you just
ridiculous.
Did. You said, let's just get other people's monies flowing into the economy.
Well, it makes sense.
Well, it makes sense for you... To
Do
keep
you know,
saying
$1.6 billion a year
I would hate
interstate travellers spend here.
Territorian. Yeah, correct, Tracy. And we want to open them back, but we want to open them back safely, and we can't make excuses for that. It's easy to sit on the other side and say, just open the doors, let everybody in, and then when there's an outbreak, you'll all point at us and say, why didn't you keep us safe?
We can't win in that
argument. That's what you want. That's okay. That's a political argument. I totally accept it.
I'll give you just one little tip, you know. If we're looking backwards and blaming everybody else, and so the GST,
Terry, were part of it.
Yeah, the GST fund is going, you know, it was reduced last time. And
correct.
The only heavy lifting that was done was to lift up a begging bowl and go to Canberra and cry because you don't have enough money.
Every government in the Northern Territory goes to Canberra and asks for money.
There's 17 mines that have stalled in the approval process, bogged down. If we just get some movement on some kind of development, there would be some kind of lift in the territory, and I think there's actually a great future for the territory if we could just get our decision making right.
A large number of long mines that have opened under the Labor government, so that's wrong.
So, Katie, according to Saul Eslake, the decline in the GST coming into the territory economy is going to drop by about $350 million. Now, just to give your listeners some idea of the magnitude of that, that's the equivalent of the territory family's budget. This is the this is what's ahead of us. We haven't got time to wait till November, December to come out with a plan for the future. We need one today.
It is Friday morning. It's the week that was. I've got Kate Warden, Terry Mills, Tracy Hayes and Matt Cunningham in the studio with us. Now, I want to talk about the Police Association survey results, which were released earlier in the week. Now, I do want to preface it by saying that the survey was conducted about February this year, so prior to COVID-19. But the survey found that 87% of respondents believe the Northern Territory government doesn't understand policing issues. 86.5% of respondents believe the Northern Territory government interferes in operational matters. 62% of those respondents believe the Northern Territory government does not support police. 90% believe the current recruitment program is ineffective. The list goes on, but 15% of members surveyed continued to express dissatisfaction with the Chief Minister and specifically called for him to resign. Now, I know that we would always be a little bit, I guess it's always, it's one of those things when a survey is conducted, particularly if you're talking about a survey being conducted by a union that represents a workforce, you might expect them to be a certain way. But I do think that it's worth pointing out that the Police Association represents 99% of the police workforce, is what their president had told me yesterday, Paul McHugh. And these results, some of them are really quite concerning. And again, like I'll say, they were obviously surveyed about February this year, so prior to COVID-19, but still a worry.
I think, Katie, you know, I'll say right up front that our police do an amazing job under very, very tough circumstances a lot of the time. And I'm particularly proud of the force that we've got. But I think I was looking at the survey because I knew that we might have a chat about it today. And it's only, I think it's as low as one in three police officers actually responded. And, you know, often people will respond to something if they've got something to say. The people that have perhaps not got something to say, that's not taking away from that survey. But I also, they'll just not.
So it was 500 respondents, which
correct,
in
which is
any
about
survey
one in three.
You would say is a good size.
It is a good sample size. But as you say rightly, they are a union, they are a lobby group. And I think as we go to the election, if you look back over the last few elections, it's really clear that they've they've always had something to say about now, and so they should. You'll see the CPSU will talk about it, the other the various unions will come out and make their demands, and this is the setting that they
like to set. One of the demands
is
that there be no pay freeze. Is that one of the demands?
Oh, it's highly likely that they'll lobby for that, Matt, as you would expect. But you would also expect that police would ask for more resources. But, I mean,
so
I've spoken to police officers myself.
This is clearly the heart of the problem right here. We're dismissing the results of a very important survey.
I'm not dismissing them at all, Katie. Don't put, Tracy, don't put words in my mouth. I'm not dismissing it at all. But I'm saying you have to also put a survey in context. We are going into an election, and the peak lobby group for police would, of course, come out and say what they want. They are well-equipped. They do a great job, and we do need to sit down at the table and talk to them. And we can always do better. That's really important.
Well, if you're not dismissing the survey, your comments are certainly undermining the integrity of the survey.
Oh, they're not undermining, Tracy.
To make some comments on that. I mean, very clearly, there is no Commander-in-Chief in the Northern Territory. It's a very damning survey. Ignore this. Do so at your own peril, I say. Now, the problem here, very important survey in my mind, this really gets to the heart of the issue here. This goes beyond the spin and the rhetoric that we hear day in, day out about the government's view of the police force in the Territory. This really captures the heart of some of the issues we have here, and it starts at the very top. 87% of respondents say government do not understand policing. Now, that's really obvious. The Chief Minister doesn't even hold the portfolio anymore. So that shows you that the problems with the relationship between Northern Territory government and the police force starts at the very top.
That's a good assumption.
It's one of these things. I think it's the anger towards the Chief Minister and towards the government earlier in the year was it was very evident from the police force. All you had to do was, take a look at some of the comments that were being made sort of online.
So you're referring to Yundamu and the comments there?
Some of those. Yep, definitely the comments that were made there. But I think that there's been some concern for quite a long period of time as well when you talk about the recruitment and talk about the 120 number, which we've heard sort of so many times, and there's been sort of backwards and forwards from all political parties about how many police need to be recruited, where those numbers are at. You know, from what I can gather, and please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but a lot of what we do within the Northern Territory and a lot of the way that we push for change to different issues that we've got in the Northern Territory, the responsibility of those changes coming into play really lands on the shoulders of our police force. So we've got to make sure that they are adequately resourced. We've got to make sure that they've got as many police officers as they need. And, you know, for me, the figure that is a concern is that you've got 90% of them saying that the current recruitment program is ineffective. To me, that's actually a real worry. If we're not recruiting as many police as what the force believe that they need to have in order to do their jobs, that's actually a concern.
Have a look behind that. Just go a little bit behind those numbers, is that they're dead right that we've got 4.66% attrition rate, and we've got a recruitment of just over 2%. So we are losing more than we're gaining. And dismiss the voice of the police at your peril. Therein is a problem. What must we do? They're saying something about how they could be supported in a way that you reduce at least attrition. They're saying something in that report. And they need additional support, understanding and respect. If you were to deliver the help that's required, as we outlined in our policy, which I launched earlier in the week, you could reduce attrition. And at the same time, disconnect the recruitment process and the decision making from the political cycle into a real objective one, so that you can keep up, look after the police. Make sure you provide them with the support necessary. You could reduce attrition and make sure you just keep the numbers up.
I think we've got an utmost respect for the police, so it's disingenuous to say we don't. I believe that per capita we actually have the best, we have the most numbers of police in Australia. Obviously our policing...
Therefore we've got a very big crime problem, haven't we?
Our policing issues... are different to other jurisdictions. Obviously, we've got, you know, we need to get people out into different regions. I think that Jamie Chalker, to be honest, is doing a fantastic job in that role of reforming and getting people on side. He needs to be given some time to do that work. And I think if we took a survey now, considering that survey was taken probably at a fairly heightened time, Katie, to be honest, that we looked right way across the police the police force, we might see a little bit of a difference in that. But we need to keep working with the police. There's no doubt about that. We need to keep it and keep making it as an attractive job for people to want to do, and we need to have a lot of strategies around recruitment.
You are listening to Mix 104.9. It is the week that was. Well, nearly time, I guess, for us to wrap up this morning. We have got Kate Warden, Terry Mills, Tracy Hayes and Matt Cunningham in the studio. There have been a couple of other big stories, of course, throughout the week. There always is. We know that cattle producers involved in that class action against the federal government learned that the decision to ban the live export trade to Indonesia was unlawful earlier in the week. Tracy, I know that you were certainly busy and part of that.
Yeah, thanks, Katie. It was a really important decision, not only for the businesses and livelihoods right across Northern Australia in terms of a compensation output, but also in terms of holding governments to account. It really sends a strong signal to me about the importance of good governance and good government and the implications of reckless decision-making. So it really puts government on notice about how they will respond to television programs, how they will respond to activist behaviour and social media outrage. So it's taking the time to consider your decisions very, very carefully, taking all things into account. This is a landmark case. This is a new precedent at law, and it's going to be, I believe, talked about in law lectures in universities right around the country for many years to come.
I fully agree with what Tracy's just said completely. There's another element to it too, is this also is a significant message to Indonesia, because this really hurt the relationship that
yep.
between our two countries. And I visited Indonesia at this time, and I don't think Australians grasp the way they felt about a rich country disrupting their food security. And I think this will help in some way repair that with the new free trade agreement.
It was interesting to hear Hamish Brett on Tuesday, when the decision was handed down, actually said that we owe Indonesia an apology over what happened here. But the other thing that hit home for me on Tuesday was just to see up close the personal toll that that decision had taken on good, hard-working Territorians. To see Colin Brett giving an interview, he gave an interview with Sky News, he was in tears talking about what he's been through over the last 9 years. The devastation that that snap decision caused to so many people here, you know, that is something that should never, ever happen again. Unfortunately, we saw it happen again. We saw the Malcolm Turnbull, the Prime Minister, call a Royal Commission, you know, into youth justice on the back of a television show without even asking a single question of anyone in the Northern Territory. I just hope that in future we don't see those knee-jerk reactions come from Canberra because they have a devastating impact on a lot of people.
Won't get any division from me today, Katie. No. Well, it's a good decision for Territory cattlemen and women, I should say, and a good outcome for everybody
involved.
And
let's hope that the Commonwealth does the right thing and doesn't appeal that decision. And I'm sure the Northern Territory government will be encouraging them not to appeal that decision.
I know that Paul Henderson at the time certainly supported the group that was making that claim. So that's really good.
Yeah,
it's a great outcome.
Parliament at the time. I'll tell you all about that.
Well, we're just about ready to wrap up. We've got a couple of minutes left. We might just talk very quickly about this Charles Darwin University has unveiled their plans for an 8-storey education and community precinct designed by ARM Architecture with interiors by Gear and landscape architecture by TCL. Now, I've got to say, these plans that have been unveiled comparatively to the ones that were unveiled initially have created a bit of a stir and not really a lot of people questioning the design.
Katie, we've obviously just had a little chat about this one and it's really interesting. The one big thing I learnt on council when I was in that time is you can look at a building on paper and you think, oh, but when it's actually in situ, it actually can complement the landscape. But it's also you do need buildings that are a point of difference, that look different. But this particular one, obviously, I think I haven't taken a great deal of time. I've seen it. It obviously is very different from what was originally proposed. But you know, I welcome development in our city. That's a great thing. That space has been a car park for a very long time. It's part of an overall city development plan about walkability, and the whole idea is for international students to be more into the city. So all of that stuff's really important. But it'd be very interesting to see how
it wasn't a local architect. Like, I would have thought that on a project like that, we would probably use somebody local. Maybe I'm wrong.
They still have to meet the Northern Territory guidelines, though, Katie. So we might, you know, you might find some elements of that don't fit because they haven't looked at it properly. You would hope they would.
I'm not too worried about the building itself, Katie. An ugly building will fit in with pretty much all the other buildings in the Darwin CBD. I'm concerned about the project
buildings
itself.
Buildings of interest,
I cannot understand how, you know, I'm reading on the front page of The Australian the last 2 days about how every university in the country is going to the wall. They're having to either force staff to take pay cuts or force them to take redundancies, that international students are going to fall through the floor, and yet somehow we're going to escape this crisis here in Darwin, and our international student numbers are going to go through the roof. I think that this the viability of this project is really has to be seriously in doubt, and I'm not sure I understand why it's necessary in the first place. CDU has a beautiful campus out at Casuarina. I think to someone who lives in a crowded Asian city, it would be an attractive place to go, and more attractive than a hot concrete CBD. And I can't understand the logic behind the project.
You're right on the money. You know, it's not the building; it's the foundation upon which this whole idea rests. If it was such a good idea, why wouldn't we have the present campus down at the waterfront bursting at the seams? That's not working.
Well, we are going to have to wrap up. It is just 2 minutes away from 10 o'clock now, so we will have to wrap up. But Kate Warden, the member for Sanderson and Government Whip, thanks so much for your time this morning.
No, thank you, Katie. And perhaps you could have Simon Maddox in here.
We've had him on earlier in the week.
Great.
Don't worry. We never miss a beat in here, Kate.
I might have to recover and have a listen to that interview.
Absolutely.
But always a pleasure, Katie, and thanks for having me in again.
Thank you. Terry Mills, leader of Territory Alliance and the member for Blaine, thank you.
Thanks, Katie.
And we've got Tracy Hayes, the candidate for the CLP for Fanny Bay. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Katie. My first week that was. Enjoyable experience.
Hey? It's always good in here. And Matt Cunningham from Sky News.
And I'm pretty sure it was Tracy's birthday this week as Katie.
So happy birthday. Cake. Oh, sorry.
It's not Barry usually brings cake.
Where's the cake?
I apologise.
Where's Rhonda?
All right. Thank you all so much for joining us this morning for the week that was proudly brought to you by BTC Construction. Instructions.